This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. Since 1988, Whitetail Institute has been perfecting annual and perennial seed products specifically for hunters who plant food plots. Their seeds have been engineered to be palatable, high in protein, and extremely attractive to deer. Whether you live in the Deep South or Midwest farm country, they have products that will help you grow your best food plot yet. For more information about their seeds and their blends, visit whitetailinstitute.com. Enter the discount code SE15 for 15% off.
We're leaving today and entering a world of Mickey Mouse waving, princess meeting and greeting, lightsaber clashing, the Twilight Zone Tower of Terror dropping, Banshee flying, Space Mountain launching, galaxy rewinding, what is the whole network galaxy rewinding, fireworks igniting, world of other worlds. For whatever you love, infinite worlds await at the most magical place on Earth, Walt Disney World Resort.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands you need, from athletic stuff, like a full-court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff, like a half-mile stroll. Get those steps in! And for morning hikes up the mountain trail, good pace, to nighttime ghost stories from the camping chair. What a twist! Whatever level of active, Sierra loves it all. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Where's Fielder?
He's gone to the dogs.
Welcome, friends, to the Gone to the Dogs podcast. Your host, Steve Fielder, with you here one more time on a brisk October mountain morning. Got a little fire on the fireplace there, some nice oak burning. Might hear that crackle and smell those carbon imprint going up the chimney. Oh, man, global warming, what a farce. But anyway, that's my take on it. You don't have to agree at all. Just want to welcome you in and tell you that I really appreciate you coming on the podcast with me today. And, you know, October is my favorite time of year. It's just absolutely my favorite. It's my birth month, and maybe that's the reason why. But I just appreciate so much this great month. And a lot of things happen in October around the country. It's hunting season for most of us in the mountain states, anyway, Appalachia. We always start our hunting seasons in October, usually around the middle of the month. I think my buddies there in North Carolina and Western North Carolina, their coon season is coming in, I believe, on the 13th of October, which would be, that's going to be, today is a Friday the 10th. That'll be a Monday night coming here. Of course, that'll be the day that you are listening to this podcast. And so if you're going out there to venture out to the creeks and hollows and ridges and all to exercise your privilege as a North Carolina hunter to harvest fur-bearing animals, I wish you the very best of luck. I lived in North Carolina for quite a while as I was employed by the American Kennel Club. Our operations center was in Raleigh, and I soon saw that that was not for me, so I moved over to the mountains of North Carolina, what they call the High Country, over in Ashe County, and had a wonderful time there the years that I lived there. One of the things that I appreciated about the state of North Carolina is that once you become 65 years old, you are issued a lifetime hunting and fishing license. And, you know, when I moved to Florida after being in North Carolina for about 7 years, I inquired back to North Carolina about whether I would need to buy a license now that I no longer live in North Carolina. And the answer was no. Lifetime means lifetime. So they issued me the lifetime license, and I appreciate that so much. And that gives me an opportunity to get back up there around Taylorsville with my buddies Mark and Chad and anyway, I call him Chad all the time. Cody is going to crucify me. Anyway, it starts with a C, and that's close enough, I guess. But anyway, I do look forward to getting up to North Carolina this fall and hunting a little bit with the boys with our plot dogs. The plot dog, the state dog of North Carolina, the plot family came from Germany, brought some dogs with them, ended up settling in North Carolina, developed the plot bear dog, and down through the years, you know the history. But anyway, plots and North Carolina just seem to go together. As I was thinking about this podcast this week, and I always do. You know, it's not easy coming up with topics all the time, and I have some guests lined up, and as is the case in hunting seasons, everybody wants to be in the woods instead of sitting at a desk or talking on a telephone. But I started thinking about what I'll call this issue, the emotional side to coon hunting. The emotional side to coon hunting. We have emotions about everything. You know, we're happy, we're sad, we're angry. All of those things seem to control us these days with the state of affairs that our country is in. But coon hunting and houndsmanship in general is an emotional ride. If I could see your hands out there, I'd see heads bobbing on that. I think you will agree with me that that's the case. And there's all kinds of emotions that come into this game. And you know, we hear a lot about jealousy in the sport, and how, and of course, that's an emotion that we might have to deal with. And envy. I often say that jealousy is being overly protective of something that you have. You have a good dog, you're jealous of that dog. You don't want anybody else to have that dog or anyone nearly like that one. That's your dog. It's your dog of a lifetime. It's a dog that you enjoy hunting And he's just naturally better than anybody else's dog because he's got your name on the nameplate. Now, come on, guys, fess up with me. You've dealt with that emotion, I'm sure. And that is very closely joined to the emotion of pride. We all have pride in our, we should have pride in ourselves. I'm not going to get on the soapbox, but I think that's what has happened to a lot of people in our country. They no longer have pride in themselves. They have no pride in their families, their jobs, their country. And therefore, it's easy for them to mistreat those things because they don't really have, they don't have any skin in the game. They're no longer proud of the way they present themselves in public. They're not proud of the language they use. They're not proud of the views they've been taught, hopefully, by their parents. So the lack of pride can be a problem. But in coon hunting, too much pride often, it manifests itself in a lot of ways. Now, I have to have this talk with myself all the time. We have a dog that we enjoy very, very much. And Facebook has made it just so simple to, you know, you have a good hunt, post it up on Facebook, show the pictures of the dog, show the pictures or the videos of the dog's tree and game with the coon in the tree and the youngsters, the pups that are coming on. All of these things I enjoy very, very much and make no apologies for the fact that I do post those things on Facebook. But the great thing about Facebook is that you can scroll right on by. If that's not your cup of tea and you're tired of hearing Fielder blow and go about his dogs, well, man, you just keep right on scrolling. You can get the latest activities from CNN, MSNBC, all of that stuff is out there for you. I mentioned jealousy, and very closely related to that is envy. That's an emotion that we can have, and that simply means that somebody else has something that we wish we had. Now, we're probably too proud to admit that we do, but let's say your buddy's broke out with a really nice dog, a nice young dog that's doing real well, and he's putting him in the events, and the dog's winning, and the guy is very, very proud of the dog and not ashamed to say so. And we look at what we're feeding and we say, I'm not quite measuring up. But instead of taking the attitude of being happy for our friend, we take that attitude of, being envious. I've seen this so many times down through the years. I always tried to be the guy that would say something nice about another man's dog if I could. If I could find something nice to say about the dog, I would do that. I remember very vividly one night at Plot Days hunting. And had a little dog there that I liked very much. And he was really clicking that night, looked real good. First coon that we made, a tree that we made, he had it all to himself. And I would consider that he just did a bang-up job. Of course, I didn't say anything. I took my points. I plussed a striking tree. I was feeling really good. The hunt rocked on. And toward the end of the hunt, one of the other dogs got out there not very far from us in a thicket. Wouldn't expect a coon to be there. Sat down under one, had the coon, looked really good. And walked in there, and of course I let that old devil jump up on my shoulder a little bit as we walked in. And I I at first had convinced myself, now, he didn't say anything about the job my dog did, so I'm not going to compliment him on his. But I couldn't do that. We talk a lot today about our upbringing and our moral compass and all those kind of things. Well, that wouldn't let me just not compliment him on the dog. And I said, well, your dog did a really nice job. But I also let the devil sneak in there a little bit. And I said, I'm going to compliment you on the job your dog did, but I'm still waiting for you to say something about the job that my dog did on that first coon tonight. Wow, zinger. Now, should I have said that? Probably not. Did it cause a fight in the cast? No. I imagine in some scenarios it could have, but you know, that's just the way we are as hunters. You know, we hate to recognize that somebody has something better than we do. And that's because we're either envious of what the other man has or we're jealous of what we have. When we talk about jealousy, a man's jealous of his wife. He's overprotective of her. He doesn't want another man to speak to her. He is being ruled by jealousy. We can be the same way with these dogs. So envy and jealousy are first cousins, and they're both designed to keep us from really enjoying the sport of hounds as much as we could. It doesn't cost us anything to walk over and say, man, your dog did a good job on that. Congratulations. I see this, back to talking about posting on social media. I see this a lot, and it's very easy to see if you want to see if others are envious of your what you're hunting. Just when you post something, see who gives it a like, and see who are which guys are conspicuous by their absence. You know that they see the posts because they commented other times. But when you post something about the accomplishment of your dog and you don't see them, and all it takes is a little click of the finger there on the thumbs up button to indicate that you like what the dog has accomplished. But some guys, man, that's like asking them for their social security number. They're not going to do it because they are envious of what you have posted. So that's enough, I guess, on those two emotions, envy and jealousy. Neither one of them are good for our sport. Both of them have been a great part of our sport since the beginning of time, and I don't expect what I have to say about it to change anybody one bit, but it might make you think a little bit going in there. There's another emotion that can come very easily when we get into hounds, and that's a competitive spirit on steroids. Sometimes we can be so competitive, so very competitive, that if we don't win, we end up having a terrible time. And that competitive spirit can also influence us to do things that we normally wouldn't do in a normal situation. That is probably the prime motivator for guys that get in trouble on the night hunts. Saw a fairly young hunter, young to the sport, just getting into competition hunting, posted on Facebook here recently a picture of a raccoon in a tree, a leafy tree. But the raccoon was easily seen. You could see the raccoon's tail, and you could see the bulk of the coon. the young hunter posted it because he felt he had been done wrong by the vote of the cast on that tree. And from all indication, that was the case. You know, you have a situation where guys vote what will help their dog instead of voting what they know to be true. And that is due to being overly competitive. Some guys have the attitude that I'm going to go out here and win this cast. It's a done deal before it ever starts. I'm the winner. My wife often chides me, let's say, when we're in the vehicle. I'm driving and I make some comment about somebody else's driving. She says, "Steve, yeah, I know it's your road. They're just out here driving on it. They don't seem to recognize that you own the road and what you say goes." Boy, these women have a way of keeping us in our place, don't they? But that's exactly what happens out here on the hunts at times. A guy walks out, there's no way that anybody else is going to win this event but me. Now, do they take a gun and hold it to the other cast members? No. But they do it in subtle ways by, in this case, voting not to score coon. This one tree was voted by two cast members to be a circle tree. The one, you know, it was easily seen on a thermal device, apparently. But, of course, we realize that you can't use the thermal device to score the game. You can use it to locate the game and then to hopefully spot the coon with your light and show it to the judge or the other cast members. This apparently was done, and the vote was 2-1 against the dog that had treed the coon. I often think of my good friend Roy Tramble. Roy worked many years with the PKC organization. Anybody that hunted PKC for any time at all knew Mr. Roy. Roy had been a judge for Jarvis Humphers in the early days of PKC and was considered to be one of the best. And Roy was a real champion for giving a dog, you know, he would champion the dog that had done the work and give that dog the credit if at all possible. And I heard that many times. I thought that I was living by that principle, but Roy just reinforced that. To the point that he convinced all of us at PKC that we needed to have a way, when this happens to a hunter, that he has some recourse. And that's when PKC began to send panels back out to the woods. And I've participated on those panels. And I've seen individuals lose their privileges for a time period, because they, what we commonly call, went blind on a cast and would not score coon. I've mentioned this before. I can mention this guy's name because he still competes. And I will say that my personal feelings for this individual took a really quick trip south after you know, we had a split tree situation, three dogs on one tree, mine on another, deeper in. We went by the tree. The judge said, "Go ahead, go to your dog and tie her, and we'll be there." We've got, you know, it was a hunting, non-hunting judge situation in a world championship cast, and they shined their tree for the full time, so I was reasonably sure that they had to circle the tree. It was a big oak. And they came to my tree, and we put the light in the tree, and my dog had a coon on the first big limb, that ran out to the left of the trunk of the tree. The judge saw the coon. I think all the dogs, I mean, all the hunters saw the coon. If they weren't, they were blind. Didn't they were blind? And one, but one guy in the cast just repeated over and over and over, "I don't see a coon. There's no coon there." The coon was actually crawling out the limb, and we were following his progress. And yet, one hunter was continually saying, "No, there's no coon there. I don't see a coon there." It kind of reminds me of back in the day. Of course, I spill a lot of guts on this podcast from time to time. But, hey, I lived through a many, many years of competition hunting. Started on my own back in the 60s and worked for 3 registries. Saw a lot of scenarios, a lot of situations and all. But, you know, seeing people declare, you know, that they don't see something when it's so obvious to the other cast members doesn't happen very often. And when it does, it just makes the individual making these outlandish claims to look very, very bad. But there are guys that will, you know, will stake their reputation. Usually when they get to that point in the game, their reputation is shot anyway, as pretty much was this fellow's. But anyway, that's being overly competitive. That's taking it to a point that, you know, all the other cast members are shaking their heads at the actually ridiculous claim that there's no coon there when everybody can plainly see that there is. Greed is another emotion. It comes from down within. And the advent of the hunt for money maybe have triggered somewhat that emotion in some people, but there was an old saying back there that guys will try to crook you just as much for a $2 trophy as they will for a $20 bill. And then the other side of that is that if the guy that believes that if you hunt for money, it's going to bring out the worst in people. And, you know, both of these ideas are false for the most part, maybe do come into play at times. But the thing I found when I went to PKC and started hunting for money and started being around the money hunts, which I really hadn't been around all that much in my years with UKC at that time, was that the fellows respected the fact that if they tried to cheat you on a night hunt, they were actually reaching into your back pocket and taking your wallet and taking money away from you. Not literally. Well, in some cases it was literally, because if they won the cast by those means, they did take your money. That money, if your dog won it fair and square, it was your money. So they were reluctant to do that to a large degree. So I didn't see the cheating in money hunts that I expected to see when I first became involved with them. And people are making those comments today on social media that you know, you'll see a lot more shenanigans on a, you know, a local hunt or a $30 hunt than you will on a big stage where the entry fee is sometimes several thousand dollars. So anyway, but greed can enter in, and I guess, trying to put dollars on your dog, trying to put titles on your dog, trying to make the top reproducers list, trying to be sire of the month or of the year, pup of the month, any of those races or designations. Greed can enter in and influence the actions of individuals. I'm not sitting behind the registry desk anymore or the field operations desk as I did for so many years. So I'm not fielding the phone calls that come in on Monday morning. I don't know to what degree this is a problem now. Hopefully it is not as big a problem as it was at one time. And I know that perhaps these situations would be laid out on social media. And you don't see much of that, or at least on the sites that I, frequent. I will put in a plug here for Coon Hunting Conversations. That is a group that I started, and Alan Bridges helped me, and on Facebook. It is a membership-only group. We have almost 12,000 members there in that group. And, we just don't permit anything like that of, criticizing or slandering or libeling someone else, either hunter or their dog. But I'm sure some of that would come out on social media if it were really a big situation, a serious situation. Now, many of you that are listening to this podcast today are saying, look, Steve, the emotional side of coon hunting to me is simply getting out there, turning the dogs loose in God's great outdoors, hearing them run and tree a track and use the voices and telegraph to me whether it's a hot track or a cold track, giving me that locate that I love to hear so much, listening to that incessant chop, chop, chop heading into the tree, whether it's 300 yards or 900 yards. And those are the things that the emotions that I feel. That's what the sport is all about. All these other things that I've been talking about here, jealousy, envy, even greed and over-competitiveness, don't enter into the picture for me, because I'm just out here to have a good time with my dogs. And I appreciate that so much. And that is the emotion that I tend to enjoy the most about this sport, and always have. Just the enjoyment of hunting with the dogs, seeing them perform up to their capabilities. This game of one animal figuring out the scent trail of another animal and rightfully locating that animal in a tree overhead. It's just exhilarating, and exhilaration is the emotion that most of us feel most of the time. And that exhilaration can accelerate to the point of giving us an adrenaline rush. Those of you who hunt bear with hounds, or hogs with hounds, or deer with hounds, or even rabbits with beagles, the exhilaration you feel and that adrenaline rush that you feel when the hounds are coming at full cry and you're watching that cutover and you're expecting that big buck to bounce out of there at any second, or that bear that's circled and circled around in that swamp, and now the hounds have put enough pressure on him. He's heading for the road, heading for the next block. You ride and run around there in the truck as fast as you can. You slide to a stop on that sand rope, jump out, and there goes that black son of a gun right across the road and right on his tail. In my case, it's those brindles, man, but it might be Walkers, English, Blue Ticks, whatever. The adrenaline rush that we feel in hound hunting sometimes is just incredible. And a coon hunter can experience this too. You know, you get that running coon in a cornfield and a man around. We had one night in Michigan that ran for one solid hour in a cornfield. He'd come toward the road and we'd line up on the road there. He'd see our lights and he'd duck back in the corner. Around they'd go again. Every time he got to the back corner back there, we thought he's going to go to a tree, but right back out in that corner he'd come again. Man, what a race. You could throw a blanket over the backs of those four hounds. We had a Walker, an English, and a couple of Plots, and man, they were smoking that coon. And it ended up holing out in that cornfield. We couldn't figure out. We thought maybe they caught him, but we didn't hear it. Any squeal, and we walked in there and we found a hole in the ground, and the dogs had successfully dug into the coon. It turned out to be a bobtail coon, gray faced, leggy like a fox. But what a exciting, exhilarating chase that was. So we can experience it in a lot of different forms in hound hunting. And you know, that adrenaline rush that we feel is one of the things that makes this sport so great for all of us. There are other emotions that we experience with these hounds, and one of them, and one of the hardest to deal with, is disappointment. We sometimes go to great lengths to plan a breeding, a mating of two hounds. We have high expectations. There's another emotion. But the litter just doesn't turn out like we planned. Otherwise, it can be in purchasing a new dog. I heard a friend of mine recently purchased a dog that just isn't working out. It's not performing the way that he thought it would. And so he's going to take a loss on the dog. But I'm sure he's disappointed because he had high hopes that that dog would turn out and meet the criteria that he was looking for. He's very demanding in his requirements for a dog, but he's also a guy that will pay the big bucks. So we can be disappointed, you know, in our dogs. Everything reminds me of a story. I was at Plot Days one year. I had perhaps the best Plot female that I ever owned on coon, a female I call Bear Pin Blackie. Blackie was out of our MPHA Hall of Fame female, Bear Pin Fancy. Fancy was out of the famed Weems, Butch, and Jill cross that all Plot people know about, bred by Everett Weems of Salem, Illinois. And Blackie was out of Fancy and my dad's Rip dog, which was a son of Sam, Bear Pin Sam, who was the foundation sire of our dogs there from 1960 on. Blackie was good. Let's just leave it right there. She's good. At Plot Days, we drew out with two females that were really highly acclaimed as being just really outstanding. And I'm not going to give their names because there's no purpose in trying to, you know, discredit those dogs. They were great dogs. They had the titles. They had the reputations. But anyway, I just felt so good. I was going to really get to show these dogs something. And Blackie had not been night hunted much. She had mainly been pleasure hunted on coon and bear hunted. But anyway, we were hunting out of Tell City, Indiana, went out. And on the first drop, cut the dogs loose. Blackie busted in the dark. The other two dogs just kind of hung around. Blackie came back a ways and stopped in the road. And looked as if to say, come on, let's go. Well, now, today we wouldn't want the dog to be concerned about the other dogs. We want them to go ahead and just do their thing. But I'll cut to the chase on this story. Twice this happened. Blackie came back and stood and waited for these other dogs. And I, another emotion, anger. I got angry at my dog. Have you ever done that? Ever got just really angry at your dog? Well, I didn't take physical steps to express my anger. But after the second time, I told the judge to scratch her, and I'll put her in the truck. And with that, you know, my hopes of winning that cast, or at least seeing how my dog would compete with these highly acclaimed plop females, were shattered. And along with it was my feelings. And I really should have just left her alone, you know, and gone ahead with the hunt, because the other two dogs didn't look very good that night at all either, even to the point of tree on a corn stalk on a hillside. And we know what was up that corn stalk. Absolutely nothing. But anyway, that feeling of disappointment can be very, very real, that emotion within us if things don't work out with the dogs the way we hoped. And dogs are heartbreakers. They're in so many ways. And I mentioned, I didn't mention or I even have on my list, but the emotion of grief comes to play many, many times. We grieve because the dog doesn't turn out the way we wanted, or we grieve because we really like the dog. Another emotion that we affix to these dogs, sometimes macho men won't admit it, but we love our dogs. We actually love these canines. And when something bad happens to them, the emotion of grief can be just overwhelming at times. Anybody that has lost a good dog knows exactly what I'm talking about. That grief emotion is something that it's so hard to deal with. You know, these dogs just don't live long enough. They have a short lifespan, and these hounds maybe 10 years, 12 years, some a little more than that. But so when they die, it hurts. It really hurts. And so that emotion of grief is something that we have to deal with. This is one that most red-blooded American men won't admit, but we get our feelings hurt over these dogs. If somebody doesn't say something good about our dog, or somebody says, or we hear somebody has criticized our dog in one way or the other. I've often said when we put that nameplate on that collar, that dog becomes an extension of us. And, you know, we're easily offended or hurt if someone, does go out of their way, especially to say something untoward about our dog. So we can get our feelings hurt, and that's not good. The emotion of disgust. Have you ever been disgusted with your dog? Man, you know what the dog's capable of. You've seen him do it so many times. This would relate back to the Blackie story at Plot Days. But we can just get so disgusted with these dogs at times that we just want to throw up our hands and quit. You know, a dog we've seen, we know what they're capable of doing. Maybe it's that dog. And then all of a sudden, it seems like he just blows up. He can't put a coon in a tree. He can't, or it could be that you take him to several hunts and he's just knocking on the door every cast, but he can't seal the deal. And so we get disgusted with him. And the thing that we usually do with that dog is that we look for a new home for the dog. So disgust is an emotion that's very, very real. There are so many other emotions that we can deal with and we can talk about. We get an emotion of, we can, if we don't control it, we can get the emotion of we get the idea that we're superior to our other hunters. Superiority. That's what I'm trying to say. I got my tongue wrapped around my eye tooth and I couldn't see a word I was saying there for a minute. We got to guard against that because we all put our boots on the same way. We pull our frog legs up the same way. This sport of coon hunting isn't rocket science. We all pretty much know the fundamentals, the basics. We get a dog. We make our feeble or successful attempts to train that dog. We take the dog out into the night. We expect the dog to strike, run, and tree a coon. And if they do that, we feel pretty good about it. But we have to guard against the idea that our dog can walk on water and talk on TV when, in fact, it's just doing what a coon hound is supposed to do. So let's don't get too pumped up. You know, let's don't get feeling too superior to our other fellow hunters. That's an emotion that doesn't bode well in a group. If you're having to hunt by yourself and you can't get anybody to go with you, you might ought to check that and see if you've been displaying that emotion at all. There's a couple of emotions that I think are admirable. One is the emotion of adoration. Man, you really like that dog. You've been looking for a dog like that your whole life. Reminds me of the story of the guy that sat down to write an ad for a magazine back when Full Cry and American Cooner and Coonhound Bloodlines were still something that we could enjoy. That old guy, he starts out writing, you know, big blue tick, head so big and flat, a ball won't roll off of it. Dark black body patches, dark blue ticking, straight legs, tight feet. leaves the truck on a run, strikes with a high ball and drifts the track, never barks twice in the same place, comes on the tree with a dying locate, sounds like a freight train at the crossing, rolls it into an endless chop, toenails dug into the bark. You couldn't move him with a stick of dynamite. Look up the tree, and there's always, always, always two fiery coals looking down. He reads that back to his wife, and he says, "You know what, honey? I've been looking for a dog like that all my life. I think I'll just keep him." We can absolutely fall in love with these dogs. We fall in love with the sport of coon hunting, usually the first time we go. How many podcasts have you listened to, or stories, interviews have you listened to, where the guy said, "I went the first time and I was hooked"? There's something about these dogs and about their performance in the woods at night, running a track, their mouths, their excitement, their... It just, if you've got the propensity to be a coon hunter, it's usually going to come out the very first time you go hunting. And you're going to fall in love with it. And that's what I did. Of course, I loved my dad, and I always wanted to be where he was, and I wanted to go to the woods with him. And so that's how I got started real early on, my love for my dad and my love for being with him. But the love for the hounds was there too. And I, people ask me, you know, why'd you stay with Plotts all these years? Because the very first one that I really saw up close and personal was the one that my dad bought, or actually traded a rifle for, and brought it home on a Saturday afternoon, and I thought she was the most beautiful animal I'd ever seen. And I never got past that feeling for a plot. And now, I'm sure if black and tans are your breed, or blue ticks, or English, or red bones, or, of course, treeing walkers, you share that same feeling about your dogs and about your breed. And that's a beautiful thing, that we have these breeds. And, you know, I look at the condition of our sport nowadays, and it was always that camaraderie, or that sense of community between people of the individual breeds, that made UKC what it was. That, you know, the breed days and the breed magazines, and the ability of people to find and associate with people of the same stripe, same preference. The breeds were so very important. I look back at the NASCAR situation, and when it was Ford versus Chevy versus Dodge, it was so much more competitive, so much more enjoyable for many, many people. And, you know, I wonder, and I hesitate to say anything about this, but I just wonder how we're going to keep the communities of these hounds going without the publications. That concerns me. Of course, I'm an old school guy. You know, by the time you hear this podcast, I will be 79 years old. You know, I actually got into the sport about the time it was really getting rolling. You know, after the war, I was a baby boomer. And but anyway, the breeds are so important, and the camaraderie among the members of a given breed is so very important. So guys, don't lose sight of that. You know, look up another guy that likes the same kind of dogs you do. Pick his brain about breeding, about, you know, what bloodline he has and why does he like it so much. And if he is happy, how did he get to that point? You know, and these discussions on the tailgates or on the telephone, I still have them. I appreciate the people that call me and we have a conversation. Usually it's about plots, but that just illustrates my point. You know, whatever breed you're in, the same things will apply. But anyway, I just want this sport to go forward. I really do, not for selfish reasons. I just want the young people to be able to enjoy the sport as much as I have. And believe me, I have really, really enjoyed it throughout my life. Okay, I would encourage you to go and with the demise of Kunam Bloodlines, along with some issues that Fulcry is having with getting their publication out on time due to physical problems. They've had some severe forest fires out there in Oregon. And all of that that's going on with print media, I encourage you to post. You know, pick a group that you like. You're welcome to post on Coon Hunting Conversations. Just apply and to answer, I think, 3 questions, and we'll bring you in there. And it, you don't have to pay anything to join. Just come in and join. And when you do, we hope that you'll visit often and post often and post pictures and videos and so forth. We need to keep this community of coon hunters going. We need to keep it tight-knit. If we can't do it in the pages of a magazine each month, at least we can do it on our phones and on our laptops and our iPads and through podcasts, driving down the road either to work or to a hunt. Appreciate you so much for listening to Gone to the Dogs each week, and amazingly, our number of downloads are just really good week after week after week, and we appreciate that a lot. And we also appreciate guys like Buddy Woodbury out at W Hunting Supply that make it possible for me to come to you each month, or whoever the other podcasts that you listen to. You know, support those sponsors. I want to thank my buddy Big Mark Zepp. He's got a new coon squatter. I'm going to blow the reed out of that thing when I get up to Pennsylvania here in about a week and a half to hunt with Randy Smith. I'm looking so forward to that with those Lone Pine tree and walkers. And hopefully then, you know, as we ease on toward Thanksgiving and my annual trip to the White River, I hope to squeeze in some days of hunting with the Carolina boys and the plot dogs, and just, you know, trying to stay active here despite the fact that I'm older and dirt. And I hope you are too. I hope you're just having a great time with your dogs. And if you get a little emotional about this sport and about the demise of it and so forth, just remember that there's a lot of young people out there that are just experiencing this sport for the first time. And we have a golden opportunity to help those young people to enjoy it as much as we have. It's just the greatest sport in the world, I think, for a kid to get involved with, animals, involved with the dogs, get into the bench shows, I looked at a film from Autumn Oaks here just this week, and seeing the kids and the kids' bench shows, you know, enjoying that so much. So anyway, let's keep it great. Let's keep coon hunting great, or make it great again, as our great president says. So anyway, I'm going to wrap this thing up before this voice just totally goes to pot. When I was a kid, I listened to old men. I said, why do they talk like that? I understand fully. I really do. But thank you for your patience and being with me for another week. And I look forward to our visit so much. I've got a real exciting guest. And I haven't yet got to catch up with Tony Daviduk. And I promised you that we'd get together with him. And I've got one that's supposed to happen this next week that's going to be a first for these Coonhound podcasts, and I think it'll be something that you'll enjoy very, very much. I know that I will. And so, to all my friends out there that I saw at Autumn Oaks, it was great to see you, and I look forward to seeing you again. To all of those of you who are going to the White River in Arkansas in November and December, I hope you'll look us up. We're going to be staying out there near Lower Eagle's Nest in the same cabin that we stayed at outside Holly Grove. You can find us. Just look for umpteen pickup trucks or dog boxes, and you'll pretty good chance it'll be us. Come in. We'll make a cup of coffee. There may be some leftover fish or frog legs or whatever Randy and Morris cook up for us. And if you don't have a group to go to the woods with this fall, how about planning something like that with your buddies? There's a lot of state game areas, places with cabins that you can go to. Just get out there and enjoy the experience of getting out with some of your friends. We've been going now 15, 16 years. We haven't had a fist fight yet. We haven't done anything but have a great time and eat some great food and just enjoy the fellowship. So, it's been almost an hour for us here today, and I'm going to wind this thing up. I just have a real feeling today that I need to say this to somebody. If your life is not what you expected it to be, if your emotions run the full gamut from maybe the loss of a loved one or loss of a relationship or a loss of a friendship or whatever, there is an answer. And that answer is found in Jesus Christ. And if you haven't taken the opportunity to get to know him, if you know a pastor in your area, a church or whatever, go and speak with him and they'll show you the very, very simple road to salvation. It's the easiest thing you'll ever do and the most important thing that you'll ever do. All right, fellas, we just appreciate you so much, and we all look forward to catching you out here on the road, in the woods, or whatever next week. This is Steve Fielder saying, if you look for me, the best place I can tell you is wherever there's coon hunters, cathead biscuits and gravy, fresh fried fish, and big river bottoms. And you put all that together, and it's what I call being gone to the dogs.
Where's your playlist taking you? Down the highway? To the mountains? Or just into daydream mode while you're stuck in traffic? With over 4,000 hotels worldwide, Best Western is there to help you make the most of your getaway. Wherever that is. Because the only thing better than a great playlist is a great trip. Life's the trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at BestWestern.com.
This episode is brought to you by Peloton. Break through the busiest time of year with the brand new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus. Powered by Peloton IQ. With real-time guidance and endless ways to move, you can personalize your workouts and train with confidence. Helping you reach your goals in less time. Let yourself run, lift, sculpt, push, and go. Explore the new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus at onepeloton.com.
President's Day savings are happening now at the Home Depot with up to 40% off select appliances. Looking to upgrade your fridge? Check out LG's newest model, serving up ice in all kinds of styles. Cube, crushed, craft ice, and now new mini craft ice straight from the dispenser. From cold brew to fizzy favorites, these refrigerators will have you entertaining like a pro. Shop President's Day savings and get up to 40% off, plus free delivery on select appliances like LG at the Home Depot. Free delivery on appliance purchases of $1,498 or more. Offer valid February 5th through the 25th. U.S. only. See store online for details.
Don't chew on that, Max.
Cooper loves that chew, too.
Oh, now he's into Cooper's food. Wow, he is loving it. What do you feed Cooper?
Blue Buffalo Life Protection Formula. He never leaves a crumb. I love it because it's made with high-quality protein, nutrient-rich fruits and veggies, and wholesome whole grains.
Looks like we're switching to Blue.
Blue Buffalo foods are made with the superior ingredients your dog needs to thrive. Can your dog food say that? Visit feedbluefood.com to learn more.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.